Welcome back to our Psalms of Histories series. This past Sunday, we were finishing up our examination of this monumental story of David and Goliath, where you have this 9-foot, 9-inch giant taunting the children of Israel. Everyone's afraid, and yet David, the shepherd boy, not old enough to be drafted into the army, takes a stand, is willing to go out, to go mano a mano. And instead of donning armor, he loads his sling with a stone. The stone goes whipping through the air and the giant falls. This incredible, incredible story. And there's a lot of things that come out of this, a lot of fame and accolades and notoriety that David receives from this great victory. But again, we're looking at Psalms related to stories. And I think Psalms chapter 9 is a great example of a psalm reflecting the heart of David coming out of such a moment. Again, this battle, the battle with the Philistines. Again, you got to remember that David, he goes out, he faces Goliath, Goliath falls, and then a whole battle ensues where the children of Israel are now inspired, the rout is on. This is a great, great thing for Israel. God gave a wonderful victory. And just looking at Psalms that are connected to moments gives us a depth of understanding of what David's going through within his own emotions, his own spiritual state. Psalms 9, now you can't say 100% comes out of this particular story, but I think as we get through it, you can definitely correlate David's experience with Goliath and him penning this particular psalm. Let's dive right in. It opens up a prayer and thanksgiving for the Lord's righteous judgments to the chief musician, to the tune of, quote, Death of the Son, a psalm of David. So we are given authorship directly being attributed to David. We're told that this particular psalm, and again, just to refresh, all of the psalms are actually songs. We have the lyrics. We don't exactly know what the music sounded like. The music has been forgotten long, long ago. But we're told here in the introduction that this was written to the tune of the death of the son, which apparently most scholars believe was probably a very common song that was circulating culturally at this moment. David writes new lyrics to this common familiar refrain, this tune, this melody. And so we're given that context right from the beginning. Diving into it, David says, I will praise you, O Lord, with my whole heart. I love that right from the beginning. Is David's describing praising God, not with just a part of him or a segment, but like with his entire being. That's what the idea, the heart, with using kind of allegorical terminologies, the heart reflected the desire. What David's saying, with my whole heart, with all of my desires, with all of my being, I will praise you, O Lord Jehovah. I will tell of your marvelous works. I will praise you with my whole being, and I will declare all of your marvelous works, not mine, not my deeds, not my triumphs, not my victories, but I will tell of your marvelous works, the things that you've done. You know, I like this because it does give us, just kind of as an aside here, an insight into worship. Yes, worship is exalting the name of God. It is blessing God. It's exalting his name. It's providing literally him worth, worship to provide worth to. And yet within his worship, note that he will tell, he'll declare God's works. And that I think sometimes, you know, some of our worship songs, yes, can exalt the name of God, but I think worship can also be focused on declaring certain things that God has done, recognizing his marvelous works. Verse 2, I will be glad and rejoice in you. I will sing praise to your name, O Most High. I will praise you with my whole heart. I will tell of your marvelous works. I will be glad and rejoice, yes, in your works, but also beyond his works, his person, like who God is. And then we read, I will sing praises to your name, the name of God, speaking of God's character, declaring him to be the Most High. Verse 3, when my enemies turn back, they shall fall and perish at your presence. Remember when David goes out and faces the Goliath? Goliath mocks him. He scoffs at him. What are you coming out with sticks as if I'm some dog? And David makes it very clear up front to the giant. Hey, yes, I'm not coming with swords and spears and armor, but I'm coming, yes, in the name of the Lord. What's about to happen to you, it's not this shepherd boy that you see, but it's the God of the universe, this most high God. He is your foe, and he's going to grant this victory. When my enemies turn back, they shall fall and perish at your presence, God, for you have maintained my right and my cause. Like, you've stood on the side of righteousness. You sat on the throne judging in righteousness. You have rebuked the nations. You have destroyed the wicked. You have blotted out their name forever and ever. And again, David coming off this victory of Goliath, this amazing, miraculous work of God. His heart's just overflowing, and he's praising, he's exalting the works of God, the name of God, the character of God. He's thanking the Lord for granting this victory, for honoring his right stand and his cause. Verse 6, O enemy, destructions are finished forever, and you have destroyed cities. Even their memory has perished. But the Lord shall endure forever. He has prepared his throne for judgment. He has judged the world in righteousness. He shall administer judgment to the peoples in uprightness. This is kind of an interesting example of something that you'll find many examples of throughout the Old Testament. And that is the fact that what we have here, it's a theologically you'd call it a prophetic perfect. It's describing something that's occurred as if it's going to occur in the future. What's happened here in verses 6, 7, and 8 is that God has judged, God has granted victory. But it's a creative license where David is describing it still in like the future tense, although it's occurred. The enemy, his destruction forever. While he may have destroyed cities, their memories perish, the Lord endures. The Lord has prepared his throne. The Lord judges. The Lord administers. Verse 9, the Lord also will be a refuge for the oppressed, a refuge in times of trouble. I love that idea of God being a refuge. What's a refuge? A refuge is a place of safety. It's a place of protection. It's a place where you can let your guard down. That you can be rejuvenated. A refuge, to go to a refuge, is to retreat from the battle. It's to retreat from an opposition. It's to retreat from a place of danger or challenge and to regroup, so to speak. In modern terminologies, we would call it like going on a retreat. I'm leaving the normal and I'm going away for a very specific purpose. What David is saying is the Lord is our refuge. It's the presence of the Lord. It's the person of the Lord. For those that are oppressed, we can find refuge in the Lord, especially, he adds, in times of trouble. And those who know your name will put their trust in you. For you, Lord, have not forsaken those who seek you. I love that. We have here this example, this declaration of those who have a relationship. Those who know your name, a relationship with God. And it's this relationship that spawns an action. They put their trust in you. It's a relationship that makes faith very reasonable. I'm not putting faith in a God I don't know. I'm putting my faith in a God, my trust in a God that has a proven track record, not just from the pages of Scripture, but personally. David, again, when he justifies to Saul going into the battle, taking on Goliath, when Saul says, you can't do this, you're not able, David says, no, I have experience in the fields. I've protected my flock from the threats of the lion, the assaults of a bear. Now, yes, this is Goliath, a much different foe, but what David is appealing to is like, hey, I've gone into battle with God before. And if God was faithful in those things, he'll be faithful in this thing. Again, those who know your name, who have a relationship, this relationship that David had developed there in the fields of Bethlehem, it's an easy thing when you know God to put your trust, your faith in God. For you, Lord, you don't forsake those who are seeking you. Again, Jesus would say, seek and ye shall find, knock and it'll be open. God is terrible at hide and seek. He wants to be known. He wants to be found. He wants to be discovered. Verse 11, David says, sing praises to the Lord who dwell in Zion. So he's speaking to the much broader audience, to the nation of Israel. Sing praises to the Lord. Declare his deeds among the people. When he avenges blood, he remembers them. He does not forget the cry of the humble. I find great comfort in that idea. God has a long memory. And for those of us that might be going through a period of opposition, of persecution, where maybe we're being spoken evil against, or we're being slandered or gossiped about, like always remember, like God takes note. Like, vengeance is mine, says the Lord. David says, he avenges blood. He remembers. He does not forget the cry of the humble. Now, David's appeal here, verse 13, he says, have mercy on me, O Lord. Consider my trouble from those who hate me, who lift me up from the gates of death, that I may tell of your praise and the gates of the daughters of Zion. I will rejoice in your salvation. There is a parallel idea of the gates. We have the gates of death, and then we have the gates of Zion. And David is like, you're my salvation. Have mercy. I'll consider my trouble. Lift me up from the gates of death so that I may praise you. And basically the gates of heaven. The nations, verse 15, have sunk down in the pit which they have made. And they're in the net which they hid. Their own foot is caught. The Lord is known by the judgment he executes. The wicked is snared in the work of his own hands. Meditation, Selah. Very interesting. David is describing here the fact, and we see this repeated all throughout history, that it's the very devices of men laid for the people of God that ends up being their own snare. That what comes around goes around. Goliath coming out, mocking the people of God, mocking the children of Israel, declaring, hey, come out, I'm the champion of the Philistines, let me take on your greatest warrior, not realizing that very bombastic type of declaration would be his very downfall. The Philistines come out thinking that victory would be theirs, and yet they suffered this humiliating defeat. We see examples all throughout history. The nations have sunk into the pits which they have made. The net which they hid, their own foot has caught. You know, the end story of the Bible is just that the nations of the world will end up experiencing a self-destruction, that professing to be wise, they were just fools. With this idea in the middle of his song, David declares out meditation, and then he says Selah, and you'll find Selah, this word used often throughout the Psalms. Better translated, it's almost like in the middle of the song with this idea, this big idea, that David says, hey, meditate on this, chew on this. Mark it well. He concludes, he says, the wicked shall be turned into hell, and the nations that forget God. For the needy shall not always be forgotten. The expectation of the poor shall not perish forever. Arise, O Lord. Do not let man prevail. Let the nations be judged in your sight. Put them in fear, O Lord, that the nations may know themselves to be but men, Selah. I like that. The wicked shall be turned into hell. The nations that forget God. David brings up the fact that God is judge, and that judgment will yield in a true, lasting, eternal punishment, hell. It's not an idea we like to consider or teach on or preach on. And yet when David is thinking of the enemies of Israel and the enemies of God, hey, there's a true judgment. He says all the nations that forget God are due for judgment. what a very apt application for our own world. We live in a world that has rejected God, that is removing God from the public square, that is coming with scientific explanations to deny his existence. It's the nations that forget God that one day will be judged by God. It says, arise, O Lord. Do not let man prevail. And what's the exhortation? That the nations, he closes, may know themselves to be what? But men. Wasn't that the original lie in the garden? Is that man could be his own God. And yet, it's through the judgment of God that man will be reminded what? But he is but dust. That God is God. And man is very, very small. And what an idea must have been in David's heart and his mind, that idea. But men, after he had just gone toe-to-toe with Goliath, a very formidable foe, a man of men, and yet he was no match for the God of gods. Hope you enjoyed this psalm, Psalms 9. For more of the Psalms of Histories, as well as just the Harmony of Histories series, go to our website, calvary316.tv/histories. You can find all of the media there. God bless.